Key is loading.
Okay.
In more ways than one.
Okay.
House Water and Environment Committee will re-adjourn. We're going to begin our testimony this evening with House Bill 2010 and finish up with that testimony. Next person on the list was Osbert.
Additional testimony.
Brett. Lawrence, is that correct?
No. We did show you one and you won.
Are you here for that? The Texas Tag Program, hunters, farmers.
Sorry.
We did show them that one past you.
Maybe show.
I'm trying to think if last year it's already gone, if you can see that, but I'm sure it's...
Oh, so maybe this is a different channel, we didn't...
Right, this is a, right, this is a...
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you, Chair Close and members of the committee. My name is Rhett Lawrence, I'm the environmental advocate on toxics and clean water issues with Osberg, Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. We're a nonprofit, nonpartisan public interest advocacy group with more than 27,000 members across the state of Oregon. And I'm here today to voice Osberg's opposition to House Bill 2010 and to urge you to defeat this legislation, which at least as it was initially written, was about as anti-public interest as a bill can get. As we all know, the Portland Harbor is a toxic disgrace and was declared to be a federal Superfund site in December of 2000. And we all know that something needs to be done to clean up the Portland Harbor, but unfortunately, House Bill 2010 is just not the answer. This bill is a bad idea from an environmental perspective, from a taxpayer's perspective, and from a common-sense corporate responsibility perspective. It is a perversion of the fundamental principle of the Superfund law that the polluter pays for the mess that it has created. And I haven't had an opportunity to really digest the amendments that have been proposed by Mr. DiLorenzo, and they may well address some of the concerns that are listed in my my written testimony there. But essentially anything that results in that would result in the taxpayers of Multnomah County and Portland having to pick up the tab for the industries that are responsible for the pollution at the Portland Harbor is just unacceptable to us from a public interest viewpoint. And of course the bottom line is that this legislation is simply not necessary, and in all likelihood it's not going to speed up the cleanup of the harbor by a day. The Superfund investigation process is well underway, and at some point there will be a determination of who is responsible for what at the harbor. And then those responsible parties will have to pay for their fair share of the cleanup, and that, of course, is the way it should be. The polluter pays. And as we've already heard from earlier testimony today, I mean, there are a whole lot of variables in this equation. I mean, who among the Portland Harbor landowners support this this concept, who doesn't? You know, will these bonds sell? Can they get insurance for the bonds? Is it timely? Is there a need for this bill right now? Will it prevent or preclude any of the litigation that, you know, there's sure to ensue from Superfund listening? And will it speed anything up? And I just didn't hear enough answers to any of those questions today, and I don't believe that the bill, even as amended, at least the amendments that I heard addressed this morning, will answer enough of those questions for this bill to be worthwhile. So from Osberg's public interest viewpoint, I mean, this issue really could not be any more clear-cut. House Bill 2010 is an affront to our environmental cleanup laws, an affront to the hardworking taxpayers of Portland and Multnomah County and their children, and an affront to notions of corporate responsibility and being a good neighbor. And for those reasons, we would strongly urge this committee to reject this harmful legislation and to make sure that those who are responsible for the desecration of the Portland Harbor pay to clean it up rather than sticking the taxpaying public with a bill. So thank you for your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Questions for Rhett? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, we have Keith Levitt, Port of Portland.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Keith Levitt with the Port of Portland, and we are here to testify on this bill. We've been a part of the Superfund process since the beginning. The Port of Portland is a lead in the Portland Harbor Group, which is, was referred to earlier today as a group of PRPs that are lead negotiators really with EPA and DEQ and putting together the RIFS process that is, in fact, now underway. We've also been involved in discussions behind the scenes dating back to maybe a year ago, I believe, with Mr. DiLorenzo and the proponents of this bill. We've had a lot of discussions with folks who are in opposition with the bill, and I just want to point out some areas of the bill that we have reviewed, some kind of key principle areas. First of all, we actually buy into the notion that if we ever want to break the cycle of Superfund process, which really is litigation, it's a blame game, it's see who can assign who what responsibility, years and years and years of delay, which is really the track record of Superfund, we are going to have to come up with a creative finance mechanism to deal with the most complex part of this project, which is going to be how to clean up the sediments in the harbor that are there from decades and decades ago, where it's very difficult, if not impossible, to figure out who is responsible. So we believe that. We believe we need to find that. This bill may or may not be the answer, but between now and the next 5 years or so, as this RIFS process gets to a point of completion, we firmly believe that if we want to break that cycle and do something different that hasn't been done in the Superfund process with any success, that we're going to have to find a creative finance mechanism. We view the bill on that principle to take a look, is this in fact that creative mechanism? We also took a look at the bill from the concept of polluter pays. We believe in that. That's obviously been said a lot today, and it's a part of federal and state environmental policy. And we wanted to view the bill as far as the impact to local government. And on all three of those, with all three of those principles in mind, the first draft of the bill we felt lacked a lot. In fact, we sent very specific comments to Mr. DiLorenzo early in the session as the initial draft of the bill came out, outlining a lot of our specific concerns and why we didn't really feel like it met a lot of those principles. We believe the amendments, just in looking at them today, again, I think we're going to need to digest the amendments a little bit better and get a more thorough legal review. But they go go a ways in addressing the concerns, but we'd like to see more work on the bill. I just want to describe real quick, earlier in the testimony, Mr. DiLorenzo mentioned interim measures. And those are actually underway right now as far as negotiating with EPA what's going to happen next. And what we're involved with is we have a pretty strong understanding of the hot spots that are in the river right now. And, in fact, we believe there's a group of property owners that are responsible for that and are willing to step up and do what we call interim measures, get rid of those hot spots. And we don't have the percentages down. We will learn that through the RIFS process. But just to illustrate the point, of all of the pollution that is in the Portland Harbor, we believe about 70 or so percent of that will be dealt with through this interim measure process, which, again, is readily assignable areas of hot spots where we know who the responsible parties are. We can get to work now on that effort. It's the 30% that is going to be left over, that is the sediments, that is from who knows when back in our past, that is going to be much, much more difficult to figure out who the responsible party is and how to come up with the funds to pay for that. And so we would also urge you to view this bill in a way that would be consistent with the process that is now underway for the RIFS and the interim measures, which should go concurrently. And then ultimately, you come out at the end of the RIFS process with part of this project already cleaned up, and you have the remaining very difficult part to deal with. And if we can get a finance mechanism by then, I think we believe that we will be ahead of the game and be able to avoid some of the endless type of situations of litigation that has been described. We are concerned, again, about this assumption that property values go to zero. I don't think the port, in our analysis, really believes that that would be the case. But if there is a way to capture the loss in value and put it to good use, then this would be a very, very creative way to go about that. So I'll stop my testimony there. We have a lot more detail that we could provide to you as far as our analysis of the bill. We appreciate the work of the proponents, frankly, in bringing this subject forward. It's a worthy debate, and we do have some time to have this debate if we can't figure out a way to do it this session. We are willing to sit down with, if this committee wants to move a bill, we are willing to sit down and make this bill better. And if in fact we can't get there this session, as we heard from earlier testimony, we may not be able to from the bonding perspective, then we need to not shut off the discussion and continue having those discussions during the interim, so that by the time this RIFS process is complete, we have something that's creative that that can be pointed towards, again, the area of the cleanup that in which responsibility is difficult, if not impossible, to describe.
Thanks. Questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. John Ledger, AOI.
Members of the committee, Madam Chairman, good evening. I'm John Ledger with Associated Oregon Industries. I'm going to just have a couple of brief comments. We have members that are intimately involved with this whole problem in that they are either landowners or they are lawyers or consultants. So either way, I guess our members are going to make a lot of money off it. It's going to be a massive transfer of wealth in one direction, I'm afraid. This whole issue represents a very nasty problem. And as some of you know, I was director of a state cleanup operations, cleanup program in a different state for several years. And I just wanted to make some comments I think that might help. One is I heard a couple of witnesses ago talking about the CERCLA process as being a fair way to conduct a cleanup. CERCLA was never designed to be fair. There is no fair way to conduct these things that are the results of things that happened 20 years ago or during World War I or when somebody bought the property 30 years ago not knowing what was going to happen. About in the 1970s, we passed laws that made you responsible for your releases, but we're dealing with releases before them. And so this whole issue about what is fair was finally just punted. And when the federal government devised the CERCLA cleanup law, they did not worry about what was fair because there is no fair way to do it. I used to give, when I taught at Boise State, I used to use this with an exercise in my class, try to devise a fair way to do a cleanup, and they could not. It doesn't exist. And that's why you have something here that says you may own land for 5 years. It was contaminated 70 years ago. You're responsible for 100% of the cleanup of the entire site. Or you contribute 5% of it, you're responsible for 100%. And we pick somebody with deep pockets to sue, and we expect them to sue somebody else. It was not designed to be fair. It was designed to be a brute force operation to force a cleanup because there was no fair way to do it. So what we have here, I think, is an attempt that I think the committee needs to look at encouraging to devise some alternative pathway that might be a little bit more fair or maybe a little bit more even-handed or even a little bit more palatable to people. The CERCLA process was never designed to do that. I would ask the committee to look at this bill. You know, obviously it has some rough edges. There's some problems here or there. There's some problems about money going for schools of the county that are going to have to be settled. But if it opens up another pathway to get cleanup done, I think that's worth pursuing. When I used to do this as a state agency, the CERCLA process was so brutal that we got a lot of cleanups done simply because we threatened to invoke the CERCLA process. We said, unless you could get a cleanup done, we'd invoke the CERCLA process, and then God only knows what would happen to you. That got a lot of cleanups done. But that's not a good way to do it. I think if the committee can look at some alternate way, even if it is not used or rarely used, or offer some way to get this going that is a little bit better on everybody, I think that's an important thing to do. Lastly, let me say this. These are things that happened a long time ago. I remember when I was little, I used to go out with my dad, and we'd drain the oil on my dad's 52 Chevy, and we would pour the oil in the corner of the yard. We did it for years. And it's probably seeped down into the aquifer by now and caused, you know, who knows what kind of havoc. These are things that were normal to do at the time. They weren't prohibited. In many cases, they were encouraged. Not too long ago, agencies required people to put their septic tanks down to the water level so that the waste would be carried off in the groundwater. These are things that people used to do. So I would ask that people stop looking at these things that occurred as activities of polluters or people that have some moral reprehensible tag attached to them, and look at what works, what we can use to get the place cleaned up as fast as possible, made part of the productive process of Portland. And that's really all I have to say.
Questions?
I just have a dumb question.
That's okay.
If you're taking petroleum out of the ground to begin with, that occurs there naturally, what happens to the aquifer around natural petroleum?
Madam Chairman, well, there are a couple of pieces to that. One is if you're in an oil field, it will pump oil out and they will inject water afterwards to fill up the space. But the whole pollution is something that occurs. Pollution is very often something that's valuable that occurs where you don't want it. It's like a weed. And so we're like ozone, where we don't want it low down, but we do want it up high. It's a whole problem of where you put this stuff. That's kind of the nub of it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Carrie Witt, Burgoyne for Food and Shelter.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, first I'd like to apologize for having my cell phone on this morning. It is shut off. My name is Terry Witt. I'm Executive Director of Oregonians for Food and Shelter. I'll try to keep my comments brief, too. I would like to go on record as saying that OFS supports the efforts of Tom Gallagher, John Chandler, John DiLorenzo, and the Portland Harbor Cleanup Coalition. Do we feel that House Bill 2010 as written, or even with the proposed current amendments, is the total answer? I guess I would have to say probably not. But it does represent a new way of looking at an old problem. I find the polarized attitudes that exist in Oregon to be quite interesting. Everyone wants to put folks, and in many cases even new ideas, into neat little black and white boxes. Rural versus urban, Republican versus Democrat, conservative versus liberal, conservationists versus farmers, environmentalists versus industrialists, organic versus conventional farmers, private business versus government. And I think the little boxes go on and on. The issue of cleaning up past contamination, however, should cut across all interests, and I believe it does. To me, it boils down to a phrase that was made popular by movie character Jerry Maguire, simply, show me the money. I don't pretend to know all the ins and outs of federal laws like CERCLA and SARA and orphan site cleanup, but I do know that they, too, depend upon one thing more than any other single item, and that's show me the money. With Oregon's economy stagnant at best, it should be pretty clear that general fund dollars are and will continue to be very scarce. It's refreshing to see some folks thinking outside the box, trying to find a better answer than to simply dump it on the most convenient corporation. 30 years ago, Oregon was the first state to establish a bottle bill. Matter of fact, I think it's the anniversary. It was a highly debated, radical program that was not welcomed with open arms by every Oregonian. It's interesting to note that some of the same groups who herald the bottle bill as a hallmark of Oregon's progressive environmental thinking are now totally dismissing this concept without a fair chance. I think it's easy for organizations like these that have no potential to be taxed or not assessed tens of thousands of dollars in fees or even bear liability for the consequences of their actions upon others to say that this is a bad idea. To them, I say one simple thing. Do you have a better proposal? And if so, show me the dollars. Any questions?
Thank you so
much. Thank you.
Next, we have Ralph Groner and Bob Canteen. Are you coming up together?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Bob Cantine with the Association of Oregon Counties, and they're passing around a letter to you from our president, Steve McClure, who is the County Commissioner of Union County. And I've listened to the debate today. You've had a very good discussion on the issue. Our principal concern has been, and as you can understand, the local impact of the bill. And we're right now, if you look at tax exemptions, $2.8 million down from other committees that are working on tax exemptions. And so this one adds another chunk of exemption to the list that we're having to deal with. Our legislative committee, which provides our direction, and it's 48 members made up of county commissioners, judges, elected officials. They represent a broad array of backgrounds, of philosophies, of life experiences, parties, rural and urban, that characterize Oregon. And we went through this bill with Multnomah County. We have listened to the debate today. Our committee opposes the bill in its original form, feel that there's a lot more discussion that has to take place here to find a way in which to trying to find an innovative solution to the issue that's up there, other than just opening the county checkbook or the city checkbook and having the legislature write a check off of that checkbook. And that's what this would do to us. Multnomah County, I know for a fact, has got a very difficult budget situation going on right now, and they're going to feel the impact of this kind of thing in their overall finances. So we will be glad to participate and help in any way in the discussion and the debate, but at this stage, for the reasons that you've heard today from Multnomah County and others associated with that group that have testified, including Harvey Rogers, that we oppose the bill in this form. Thank you.
Madam Chair, distinguished members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ralph Groner. I'm here tonight testifying in behalf of my bosses, which are all the locals in Portland, Multnomah County. Someone may explain that. The employees of Portland are my members, therefore my bosses. They pay my salary. The employees of Multnomah County, Local 88, are my members. The employees of the Port of Portland are my members. The employees of Metro are my members. The employees, I could go on and on, of MESD, et cetera, were wall-to-wall inside Multnomah County. So if I had someone in front of you who probably has a real reason to be in front of you in terms of real bodies and job losses, it's my union asked me, because there is really not another major union in that entire area. I'd like to say first, in behalf of labor, in particular our union, that lest anyone wonder, I'm one who teaches tax policy in Oregon. And the fact of the matter is, I'm committed to helping grow the economy. And as a result, since we're so dependent on the income tax to fund my members' jobs, I have testified for measures down the hall that have angered other labor unions and environmental organizations, even this session. Lest it bother them, I'm here to say that I'm one who understands the tax policies of this state and have supported enterprise zones wholeheartedly, have supported the tax pollution tax exemptions, timber industry and their request of me and so forth. So I don't want it to be said that we're a typical union. We're a very business-oriented union because the business of our union is to make sure public service is provided, and we can't do that without business in a cooperative approach. That may shock some people, but it is not shocking, and it's a point of view I want labor to become more acquainted with. Be that as it may, I was asked by my presidents and my boards, we have over 130 locals in Oregon, 10 of which of my locals are inside the Multnomah County are affected by this measure, and each of them have their own board of directors and their own presidents and officers. So in that case, I work for the council and am hired as a tax person to come in front of you. I would say that I personally believe this should be referred to revenue, primarily because of the one issue I've missed. Don't get me wrong, the director of Department of Revenue is very bright, but she is not a county assessor, and I have heard, listened all day to the testimony and have not heard anyone specifically get into the question of just whether, when this property goes off, if it all goes off, and the very questions I've heard each of you raise have not been asked to be answered by the Multnomah County Assessor, so I certainly hope someone would request that before you make final determination.
Ralph, we do have the Multnomah County Finance Director signed up for one.
Okay, Finance or the Assessor?
The Finance Director.
Okay, they may call them, that's Finance Director, rather. Thank you. You make me feel so wonderful.
I just hope to hear.
Yes. Okay. I'll buy them a cup of coffee. Thank you. I also want to say for the record, I'm not a negative person. I want it very clear that I happen to think John DiLorenzo, as I've said to everyone, so I may as well say to you, is not a negative person. He's the most creative person I've ever met. He's a lot brighter than I am. So when he has an idea, it's worth listening to. It shouldn't be a negative thing, okay? John's worked with my union and has been very fair through the years. I also find Tom and John and all the guys who are working on this, you might be surprised just because we're on opposite sides on this. It doesn't mean that we're enemies. I only have a very simple concern, and mine is I'm told by the county right now and by the city that I lose $3.2 million in the city of Portland, and I lose $3.2 million, that's what I'm told, in Multnomah County. I don't know what I lose in Multnomah Education Service District because the assessor or the finance director hasn't gotten that to me, and heaven knows I don't know what it means to my other agencies yet, but I've requested that of Multnomah County. I only want to say that it isn't going to be management laid off. It will be my members laid off who are currently being laid off in these local jurisdictions. And the only thing I want to say is that Measure 5, which, yes, Rob Peter, that's you, to pay Paul for local schools, you already know we've gone from 70-30 at the local level for K through 12 to 7. That's what causes a big part of our problem here. But then we pass Measure 50, and I can only say that right now in the city of Portland, I have the support staff, for example, in the police department we're laying off. If you want to move over to Multnomah County, it's my health department people that are being laid off. So when we talk $3.2 million, I'm not one who sits here and says what's fair, like Terry, and he's a gentleman, said. I have to look at the low-income kids who depend on those people that are my members providing dental care for inside the inner city of Multnomah County, inside the city and in the county. I have to look at the very services that are provided in these, and we're already cutting. We're trying to cut in the city of Portland right now. Our budget has been layoff, 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 and then I hope you've read this, Multnomah County's in worse shape. The business license fees are down, but what's really happening, not just in our county, but where you're from, is Measure 50 is ratcheting us all down to the 3% value growth. So I don't want anyone to think that it's just fair to say that it should be the city of Portland, Multnomah County, and those folks pay these, because there are very real human consequences about who loses services to help pay for this. I hope I'm very clear on this. And I can point those clearly out to you and ask Multnomah County and the city of Portland what further will have to be cut because you're already undergoing these cuts. So who the question of benefits isn't an issue to me. I want business to grow. I want them to pay income taxes. I want people to pay state income taxes. But I also think schools to be held harmless, and I don't want to fight with schools. That's politically unpopular. I've said this earlier today out in the hall. The fact is schools gained because those businesses in Portland were paying income taxes, and the people who worked there paid income taxes. So, in fact, they were helping schools as well as my county and city employees. So I don't seem to take the total benefit or the total cost away from Multnomah County and the city of Portland in terms of just fairness, at least to me, is not fair if, in fact, others have gained as well as certainly Multnomah's gained and certainly city of Portland's gained, but so is the entire metro region, and one could argue the entire state has gained because of the income taxes that were generated, since that's now the lion's share of funding, the income taxes that industry has generated, and we want to thank them for that. So I didn't mean to get serious this time of night, but I would hope you would consider the very real impacts on local government, and those are real people who provide very, very much needed services in that area. I would support this measure if it had no fiscal impact on my locals.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. McClure, here, I might get you. You beat me.
It's been a long time.
I used to do that. I used to work at Weyerhaeuser. Ralph used to work for me at Weyerhaeuser. So I just tell him where
my boss.
Weyerhaeuser.
Yes. Back in '69, went to college.
Promoted boss.
We won't go through all that. But anyway, Ms. McClure, you did say that you were looking forward to cooperating, but I did have a little bit of a reaction to, you know, to the initial memo, you know, saying our 48 folks got together, we looked at this, of course it was kind of early on, bad idea, we're against the bill, and, you know, just kind of had the read of, we looked at it, we're against it. And I really think it's too early in the process to say, you know, for sure that this is, you know, eliminating a revenue source, and we're going to shift it over to paying somebody's pollution bill instead of paying their property taxes, or whether it's a continuation of a revenue source that was going to disappear. I think, you know, there are two ways of looking at it. We don't know the answer with that. I think there's some problems with that. But I certainly would like to see. Oh, I got the wrong name. I'm sorry.
That's
Bob Constantine. I'm the worst. I know what name, so you have my apology. And hopefully I'll get it right sooner or later. You'll help me out. But I, you know, it's certainly a 48 member group is not the group to continue some dialogue. But I think that there are some concepts that are here that are unfair to try and kill early. And I think that we do need some, you know, some work in progress. I certainly saw some big problems. But this is one of those things that I think you have to look at for a while and find where they're. Maybe some win-wins, and if they're out there, try and find them. If not, and so I have some concerns that, you know, there be some ongoing mechanism to be able to respond to the dialogue, and where we see a good idea to grab one, because maybe there is a benchmark out there.
Madam Chair, Representative King, that was why my testimony was a little bit less vigorous than the letter.
Thank you, gentlemen, very much for your patience.
I didn't have to come up.
And last but not least, Dave Boyer, Multnomah County's Finance Director.